From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is a special Pledge Drive episode of Reveal. I'm Al Letson, and we are at a time of reckoning for our country. There's a pandemic that's killed well over 100,000 Americans, and at the same time, protests against police violence. The underlying issues that have caused this civil eruption aren't new. In fact, Reveal's been reporting on them for years. Today, we'd like to bring you some highlights. We start with a conversation I had with Pulitzer Prize winner Nicole Hannah Jones, a writer for the New York Times. She led the 1619 Project, which looks closely at the moment more than 400 years ago when enslaved Africans were torn from their homelands and brought to what would become the U.S. It traces how that moment and the legacy of slavery continue to shape so many aspects of American life today. For me, I think I really began to understand what it meant to be black in America in my teenage years. Listening to groups like Public Enemy and other conscious hip-hop, my world expanded. I was living in a very segregated town in the Deep South, and it was clear, at least to me, that black people were looked at as second-class citizens. Play your position and everything will be fine. But that music told me I was bigger than that, that I was greater than the limitations society tried to put on me. But it also created a little bit of a misunderstanding between my father and me. My dad was in the military, and his patriotism for this country that enslaved our ancestors didn't make sense to me. It wasn't something that we talked about, but I remember feeling it. I was in my 30s when I came around to understand that my people fought for this country. Our blood and sweat is mixed into the soil, and we should feel as much ownership, a sense of belonging, as anyone else.
It took me so long to realize that. And I also realized that that's all been part of the plan, too. That from the beginning, to make us feel like our own country is not our own country, and we shouldn't give that to them.
Nicole Hannah Jones had the same experience with her father. And ever since she was a student, she's wanted to know more about the earliest days of slavery in America.
I have been obsessed with the year 1619 since high school. That's the first time that I ever saw that date. It was in a book called Before the Mayflower by Lerone Bennett. And I just remember being shocked that we had arrived here that early and that we had gotten here before the Pilgrims, and just wondered why I never knew that before. And that just seemed really powerful to me.
When I think about 1619, I always think about, I don't know if this is the right word, but I always think about the irony of the fact that the first slaves that came here were brought on a ship called the White Lion, and mm-hmm. they landed near Port Comfort.
Yes.
I mean, just the two of those things just blow my mind away when I think about it.
It's like fiction, except it's not.
Mm-hmm.
I think about that all the time. I'm like, if you were writing this fantastical novel, you might have a ship called the White Lion carrying this black cargo in its hull that lands at a place where they will never know a day of comfort called Point Comfort.
What you're doing with the 1619 Project, it feels essential for all Americans, for the entire world, to understand the context of America right now. But I would say that most people in the United States have not been taught that history. How did you end up coming to it?
So, one, we have to just acknowledge that I was a nerdy-ass child.
so was I, but my history goes to comic books. you're digging into, like, real history.
I would say I was a new type of nerd. So I always have been infatuated with history just in general. And I've always been, as long as I can remember, very aware of race and racial inequality and had this strong sense of injustice. So I was watching the History Channel. I was reading historical books and where I could, historical books about black people from a pretty young age. But I'd say where that really started to sharpen was in high school. Our high school offered a one-semester Black Studies class. It was like I was seeing the world for the first time, seeing, one, that there were thousands of books about Black Americans, Africans, about our history, but also feeling this deep anger that no one ever thought we should know any of this?
I tend to get or feel anger when I hear people talking about the founding fathers in this way that frames them as these benevolent individuals that came down and had all these great high ideals, and that's what America is based upon. And knowing the truth of the matter is that most of the men that created these documents owned human beings.
Yes.
One of the things that you say in your essay is that they knew that they owned human beings. They didn't look at Africans as they were less than human. They knew wholeheartedly that they were humans. I would say that, like, there are a lot of historians who, like, make excuses for that and say that, like, well, they didn't quite understand humanity. What's your response to that?
I mean, I do think they believed we were inferior, for sure. But, right, there was no doubt that they understood that we were human beings. You see this. They are conflicted about slavery. Jefferson talks about in his writings how one day God will make this nation pay for what it has done. They know full and well the hypocrisy of what they're doing. They know that they are having to torture people in order to get them to do this work in a way that you don't have to do with animals. You don't have to pass laws against animals reading because you're afraid they'll read and want to start an insurrection. You know, you don't have to pass all these laws to keep animals from congregating because you're afraid they're going to plot against you. You don't stay up late at night every night wondering if all of the cows or the horses are on your farm are going to rise up against you. You don't have sex and procreate with the animals that you own. So they clearly understand that Black people are human, but they also understand that these enslaved people are making them a lot of money and they want to keep making that money. So I think a lot, and you know, this essay tries to talk about this is why we have to teach that slavery was marginal, that slavery wasn't really about money, that somehow we transport 13 million people across an ocean for an unprofitable institution. We have to tell ourselves all of these myths, because how do you say that George Washington was a great man while also acknowledging that he operated a forced labor camp? Like, Mount Vernon is a forced labor camp. These are forced labor camps by any definition. And we don't want to reconcile with that, because then we have to reconcile with the fact that we were not exceptional.
The framers of the Constitution, they lay out the government, but it never mentions the word slavery. What are they saying with that omission?
If you're not ashamed of something, you don't hide it. And the fact that the majority of the founding fathers were enslavers, and they found a country where they have no intention of abolishing slavery, they, in fact, need a constitution that is going to protect the institution of slavery, but they don't want to utter the word. That tells you that they know that this is wrong. When they're in the Continental Congress and they're drafting the Constitution, there are discussions about what words to use and what words not to use to both enshrine slavery but also have deniability. And that's because they see themselves as creating this new free democracy in a world that doesn't have any. And they want this document to present to the world who we are. And who wants to present to the world that you are a country built on the bondage of one-fifth of your population? And so they make this pact, and the words never appear in the document, even as the document sustains the institution. And if you think about that, this is how race has worked from then until now, right? You can pass these policies, you can say these things, you can implement things that are clearly racist. But if you never call them by the name, you can deny that they're racist.
One of the things in reading your essay that kind of stood out to me, along with the founding fathers who clearly were flawed in action, no matter what kind of words they used, Abraham Lincoln. I did not know this story. So he has five free Black men come to the White House, and this is in the midst of the Civil War, correct?
Yes. So it's 1862, August of 1862, 243 years to the month that the first Africans were sold into Virginia. And the war is not going well for Lincoln, and he's having trouble getting enough white recruits, and he is contemplating issuing the Emancipation Proclamation. The Emancipation Proclamation, of course, applies only to enslaved people in the rebel states. So if you were still in the Union and were a slave state, you could keep your property. And he's thinking about freeing millions and millions of Black people, and he's worried about what that means to suddenly overnight have millions of Black people free in what should be a white man's country. So he calls five of the most esteemed Black Washingtonians. These men are educated, they are learned, they are ministers, educators, and very much part of the Black elite. And he calls them in, and he tells them very matter-of-factly that he has called them to tell them that he's thinking about emancipating enslaved people, and he has gotten money that, once they're free, to ship them away, to ship them to another country. So this man that we think of as the great emancipator, you know, he embodies the inherent contradictions of our country.
Yep.
He believes slavery is immoral, but he also believes that Black people should never have social or political equality with white people. And in fact, it would be better if they just weren't here at all, that they are incompatible with democracy. And so he calls these five Black men who are abolitionists, who have been, you know, exerting pressure for the liberation of their people, to tell them, you're going to finally get what you want, and then I want you to leave.
Did any of the advisors that he brought to the White House that day, did any of them consider the idea of going somewhere else?
Interestingly, yes. So most were absolutely opposed. But there was at least one who thought it wasn't a bad idea. And when you consider it, it wasn't, right? Like, this country had been terrible to us. This country had done the most atrocious things to us. And if they're going to say, you know what, we still don't want you here, we still don't want to give you full rights even when you're free, we're going to give you some money to go start somewhere new, it would have made sense if all of us were like, let's get the hell up out of here.
Yeah.
But we didn't.
It's sort of the precursor to the Black Star Line, to Marcus Garvey.
Absolutely. And there were during that time, small numbers of Black folks who did try to build colonies in places like Panama, in certain parts of Africa. They did try to strike out on their own and just be rid of a country, a white country that had treated us so poorly. But most Black Americans said, this is our country, our ancestors' bones are buried here. We fought in the Revolutionary War to make this a country. We built this country, and we're not leaving. That's really what my essay tries to get at, is our founding fathers did not actually believe in the ideals that they wrote down, but we did.
Yep.
And we were determined to make them real.
That's Nicole Hannah-Jones of the New York Times. She led the paper's 1619 Project, which won the Pulitzer Prize. This story was produced by Aikshree Skandaraja. If digging deep into the roots of the issues in the news is important to you, you can help make that happen by supporting this public radio station. Here's how.